Emotions are wide-ranging, encompassing, for example, sadness and love, joy, hatred, grief and fear, envy, disappointment, compassion, annoyance, anger. Proverbs addresses the expression of emotions, but it does so with a focus upon self-control, particularly in relation to what we would term the negative emotion of anger. While it certainly speaks of joy, it addresses the issue of envy. It has something to say of disappointment. It makes reference to irritation or annoyance. Proverbs, by far and away, has more to say about self-control in the area of anger than any other of the emotions. Indeed, in terms of the expression of emotions, generally speaking, Proverbs advocates self-control. Or to put it perhaps another way, patience. Not to be too quick in the expression of emotion. As we consider then this topic of the expression of our emotions with a focus particularly in the area of anger and its expression, think more broadly than that alone, for the application of these principles apply to every area, to both the positive as well as the negative emotions, but certainly more so with regard to the negative emotions, those that will have a negative effect upon the people who observe our emotional response and may even be the recipients of it. So the first thing that we need to note from the book of Proverbs is the virtue of self-control. To start us off, chapter 25 of Proverbs and the very last verse of that chapter says that a man without self-control is like a city broken into and left without walls. It's an image that perhaps is not particularly plain to us living in a city without walls, though we do have a flood prevention scheme, and if those walls were not there, we would be in danger. Whenever there were a heavy downpour, we would be wondering, will our homes be inundated with water? Well, that's the kind of picture here. A city without walls, whether they be flood defences or, as in the days of Proverbs, defences against enemies, a city without walls is vulnerable to attack, vulnerable to destruction. And a man without self-control is vulnerable to destruction. In chapter 29 and verse 22, a man of wrath stirs up strife, and one given to anger causes much transgression, not only to others, and certainly that is true as an angry man tends to instill a hatred or an anger in others as well, But they themselves are tempted to behave in an angry way without the self-control and restraint that will keep them from sin. They will begin to speak angry words of sin. They will begin to say things that are hurtful and even untrue. And they may do things in a fit of anger that are completely inappropriate. They may harm others, even go so far as to kill others. In chapter 15 and in verse 18, the compiler includes this proverb: a hot-tempered man stirs up strife, but he who is slow to anger quiets contention. Here then is a contrast being presented between a man without self-control and one who has self-control. In the midst of the same kind of situation, one exacerbates it and causes strife. The other pours oil on troubled waters, as the saying goes, smooths things over, quietens things down. And so likewise in chapter 29 and in verse 11, a fool gives full vent to his spirit, but a wise man quietly holds it back. Now there are others statements that are also positive towards self-control, having considered those ones that demonstrate the negative aspect of lacking self-control and the harm that it brings. Chapter 16 and verse 32, whoever is slow to anger is better than the mighty, and he who rules his spirit than he who takes a city. The one who is able to control their own emotions and the expression of them is stronger, is more powerful than a captain of an army who overruns a city. There is great strength, determination, and diligence required to bring one's emotions under control in the heat of the moment. In chapter 14 and verse 29, whoever is slow to anger has great understanding. Remember that the term understanding in the book of Proverbs is virtually synonymous with wisdom and knowledge. All of these words are used in the same way. Whoever is slow to anger has great understanding. He is wise. But he who has a hasty temper exalts folly. He puts folly on display and raises it up for everyone to see. And then chapter 12 and verse 16. The vexation of a fool is known at once, but the prudent ignores an insult. Self-control does not only refer to the words that are spoken. And perhaps the most difficult aspect of self-control is in terms of body language. We may keep our lips tightly sealed. In fact, so tightly sealed, it's very obvious that we're biting them closed. Well, that's conveying the same thing virtually as if we had spoken the words that we are so painfully resisting from uttering. In other words, self-control involves the control of our facial expressions as well as our verbal expressions. The vexation of a fool is known at once. He doesn't need to even open his mouth. It's written all over its face. And how difficult we find it to pause in terms of a reaction to something someone has said or something someone has done. But self-control, when we have mastered it, will include this aspect of expression as well as the verbal and active expression of our emotions. The virtue of self-control. In the second place, we need to observe the outworking of self-control. In chapter 17 and verse 27, we read, "Whoever restrains his words has knowledge, and he who has a cool spirit is a man of understanding. Even a fool who keeps silent is considered wise. When he closes his lips, he is deemed intelligent." While certainly we need to extend the idea of self-control beyond words to body language, it is with our words that we most clearly express the way that we feel and a reaction to those who have upset us, caused us to become angry or whatever. Now, self-control, as it works itself out in our lives in any given situation, will in the first place give us time to hear the other person. Chapter 18 and verse 13 tells us, "If one gives an answer before he hears, it is his folly and shame." You've seen it done. You've perhaps done it yourself before the other person has quite finished their sentence. You're already framing a response in your mind, or even uttering it with your lips. You haven't heard all they have to say, and you speak with haste before a full explanation has been given. Self-control gives time to hear. In the second place, self-control gives time to reflect. Chapter 15 and verse 1, "A soft answer turns away wrath, but a harsh word stirs up anger." Self-control will enable a person to hear what the other has to say, contemplate, reflect upon what they have to say, and think about the best response to give. A response that will calm the situation rather than exacerbate it. That will turn away wrath rather than stir up anger. Self-control gives time to hear, self-control gives time to reflect, and self-control, in the third place, gives time to forgive. In chapter 19 and verse 11, "Good sense makes one slow to anger, and it is his glory to overlook an offense." You see, self-control causes a man to stop, listen to an explanation, reflect upon it, think about a response, and even perhaps conclude that it's no big deal after all, and overlook the offence completely, giving time to forgive. Such is the outworking of a man of self-control. But what is the context for self-control? Self-control is a virtue worth possessing. We've observed how self-control works itself out in the situations of life. But what is the context? What is the framework within which self-control is operating? Well, first and foremost, as we've observed many times, self-control being the outworking of wisdom begins with the fear of the Lord. It is in the context of a right relationship with God. For it is God alone who enables us to gain control of ourselves. In our natural sinful state, we do not have control of ourselves. Our tendencies, our direction will be sinful. We need to be made new. We need to have the power of God in us, equipping us to gain control of ourselves. It's in then a context of a right relationship with God that self-control can flourish. And bearing in mind the outworking of self-control, giving time to hear, reflect, and to forgive, the context of self-control with God's power at work enables a person to be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger, as James tells us in his epistle in the first chapter. For, James goes on to say, the anger of man does not produce the righteousness that God requires. You see, the wisdom of God will conform us to the likeness of God, to the character of God. If we are wise, then we will be increasingly conforming to the image of Jesus Christ. We will be increasingly made like him. We will increasingly demonstrate his righteousness in our lives. And the very practical outworking of that is expressed in these three instructions: to be quick to hear, slow to speak, and slow to anger. Indeed, Paul, writing in his letter to the church in Rome, in chapter 12 and verses 17 through 21, says this: live in harmony with one another. Do not be haughty, but associate with the lowly. Never be conceited. Repay no one evil for evil, but give thought to do what is honourable in the sight of all. If possible, so far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. Beloved, never avenge yourselves, but leave it to the wrath of God, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. To the contrary, if your enemy is hungry, feed him. If he is thirsty, give him something to drink. For by doing so, you will heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Do not be overcome by anger, but overcome anger with self-control, to put it in the language of Proverbs. The context then of self-control is a right relationship with God, which focuses on being like God. Not being like God in terms of sovereign authority, but being like God in terms of humble compassion. For it is in Jesus Christ that we see the wisdom of God demonstrated in the world. And he is our supreme model. And so Peter writes in 1 Peter chapter 2 and in verses 21 through 24, "For to this you have been called, because Christ also suffered for you, leaving you an example so that you might follow in his steps. He committed no sin, neither was deceit found in his mouth. When he was reviled, he did not revile in return. When he suffered, he did not threaten, but continued entrusting himself to him who judges justly. He himself bore our sins in his body on the tree, that we might die to sin and live to righteousness. By his wounds you have been healed." Self-control must be at the heart of our expression of our emotions, particularly our negative emotions that would harm others or ourselves, whether it be anger or hatred or envy or annoyance or disappointment. Self-control in the context of the imitation of a righteous God will enable us to live at peace with others and with ourselves. May God give us the strength to imitate Christ in his self-control.